What is that? Doug or something? What is that?
Yep, yeah? It is Doug.
Oh, wow. Which is amazing because I didn't have that channel growing up.
You didn't? You were
Nickelodeon or something?
You were a non-cable family?
Non-cable.
I think... Let me think about
that. We had basic only, so...
Wow. That... You know what? That makes sense to me.
Really? Why? Careful.
It's not bad. Here's why. Is because my family, we're a TV on family. You come into a house, TV's on.
Yeah.
Like, TV is on constantly. And it never, I don't think it's bad, says me when I'm being unproductive. No, I don't think it's necessarily bad, but you guys, you're like a, TV on is very intentional for you.
Because of Matt.
Would you have the TV on if you had your druthers? You hate a room with the TV as a focal point.
Yeah, I don't like it to be a focal point. I think that's, like, more a thing that happened, though, after kids. Like, if it's just me and I'm home alone, I'll put on a stupid show on my computer and walk around the house ignoring it.
That's, yeah. Because
it makes me feel like I have company.
That's how I feel. I think that's what it is for me.
Oh, this is so nice.
It's very rare, even when I'm, when I'm reading... I just like distraction is really what it comes down to. Distract me from my own thoughts. I just had therapy. God bless my therapist. But yeah, I like distraction. I think maybe that's like a form of ADD.
Yeah. Right? Sure.
Sure. So huge news. We went to Medieval Times yesterday.
Epic news. Griffin is a prince. Carrie and I have never seen Griff so in his element where in the morning I put like a weird toga-ish thing on him and he was like, am I a prince? And I was like, yes. And then Koa and him were kind of LARPing about it and he kept calling Koa sister, are we going to get in the car? Mother, father king Matt. And he was like talking so weird all morning. I was like, this kid. And then we got there and he was so happy.
Well, you missed what he named me.
Oh, he goes. And I said, and we got to go pick up Carrie. And he goes, yeah, Carrie can be the chef. There's a king. I was the queen. Matt was the king. Co was the princess. Griff was the prince. And Carrie was the chef.
I feel good about that. I feel good. The chef provides, and then later we get to Medieval Times, and no one looks more like a boy king than Griffin. He's pacing with his arms behind his back.
Like holding court.
And my favorite is because the service was amazing, because the servers were behind us, Griffin got to sort of like troll between the two aisles of the whole party with his hands behind his back and looking really grumpy when his knight didn't do very well. And then he would like lean down by our ears, like lean over with his little head in between us and just start screaming, are they a bad guy? And his little voice.
It was so cute.
It was so cute. And then when someone had so much fun. It was amazing. And then he expanded his kingdom and he went downstairs.
He was getting really close to the action. He went wherever he wanted. And he told Rozzy he was doing it because he's a prince.
He goes, you know, I can do this.
Yeah, you are. Because I'm a prince. So intense. Then we went and saw a puppet show and he really liked the puppet show. It was Wizard of Oz. And all night he was like, you know, Tim the Man? And I was like, Tin Man? And he's like, yeah, Tim the Man. And I was like, yeah. I think you mean the Tin Man. And he'd be like, I don't. And I was like, oh, okay.
He's like, so you're wrong on that. You did star in a show that was based loosely off of Wizard of Oz for years, but I think you're wrong. And what's funny is the character in our show was Tim Woodsman. So
he's not wrong. Two things. What was the first? I can't remember now. Matt has skin cancer.
Okay. Wow, I want to know what the first one was. If that's the second priority on your list, is it basal, squamous, or melanoma?
I don't know. He has to go into surgery, but they're going to do it. They just told him today, and they were like, yeah, you have cancer, but it's like we are not worried about it. Like, we don't think it has, like, gone past.
Metastasized.
Yeah. So they're like, we're just going to do surgery on it. And Matt was like, well, I'm about to go on vacation and I want to swim. And they were like, we'll do it after. So he's going to go in for surgery vacation. It's that kind of skin cancer. A casual skin cancer.
Where is it on his body?
I think it's on his face, but I'm not sure. He just texted me like 5 minutes ago and said, I have to tell you something. I have cancer. I was like, what?
Via text?
Yeah.
He sends this?
Yeah.
This is wild. This is. Did he send anything else?
No, I mean, he told me not to worry. He was like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's okay. Like, they're going to do surgery on it, but I can do it after the trip so that I can swim. And I was like, okay. I don't know what to say. Like, sorry. Sorry you have cancer.
You know,
it seems like it's not that big a deal.
We were talking about histrionic personality disorder at dinner the other night, and I've just been sort of, like, thinking about it lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually kind of, like, love the idea of a character who has it and, like, what they would do if they had the same diagnosis as Matt and make it their whole personality and being like, I have cancer.
Yeah.
Even though it's, like,
exactly.
Like, honestly, I'm excited about this cancer. If he's going to get cancer, let's have it the one that they're like, yeah, let's wait, cut it out.
It seems like the good one to have.
I'm assuming it's basal cell, though.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
I know about all the skin cancers because as my dermatologist said, she was like, it's not if, it's when for you. Like, it's like.
Yeah, Matt's like that too. And that's like, Matt goes to the dermatologist all the time. His mom has had cancer several times, skin cancer. So, like, he's very aware that, like, he has the same skin as her and it is prone to getting cancer.
The skin type that we're looking at is ultra white, ultraviolet enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite of violet, ultra white. So you had the birthday party last night. We went to Medieval Times, Boy King, Griff Dog. Anything else?
I would say that I had like a really amazing night in the park at the Prospect Park Soiree.
Yeah.
And if anyone lives in Brooklyn, go to that. It is so great. It is so beyond great where you're basically, it reminded me of New Orleans because it was like you have a crew and you have to decorate a float, but it's a dining table. But people came and were like, my theme is garden and had fruit hanging, dangling in a thing they made that went over the table, fake fruit all over the table, fruit fascinators, chairs that were dressed like different kinds of fruit. It was just, people went way over
the
top in theme.
You should tell about the bodega table.
Yes, there was a bodega table with a cat, a stuffed cat, Lucy's for sale, like, you know, single cigarettes, little bags hanging, the kind that they bag your bodega stuff with, those black, like, trashy bags. And everybody at the table was brown bagging their drink. It was very, very clever. I loved it.
So this was, in case you didn't know, the Prospect Park Soiree, from what I understand, is like you get a ticket and mm-hmm. food and drink are not included. You're just paying for
nothing.
And so everybody brings their own picnic. And so some people are like, just bring basic picnic stuff. But what you can also do is dress
they
up
the
table.
They set up tables for you, though. They set up tables and chairs and linens. So when you show up, you're like, we're a group of 20, and they're like, great, we'll seat you. They find an empty 20 top. They put you there. You decorate the hell out of it and set up your picnic. The first 2 hours is a live band while everyone's milling about and having dinner. It's like you're at a wedding. You keep running into people you know. It's so fabulous. Each person's allowed to bring one bottle of wine, and then they have wine for sale in addition. And then
do they check your bags for one bottle?
Uh-huh. And then, like they do. You could probably get away with. But how much do you want to lug into the park anyway?
That's fair.
Matt and I only brought two bottles. I was glad we only brought two bottles.
I saw him stuffing them in a bag, so I
recall
that.
And then we danced as hard as we could because a DJ plays for the last 3 hours. And it was a really, really fun DJ that just the crowd was in love with. And it's
That's
all people
crazy.
My age. Like, people late 30s, 40s, some 50s. Like, it's partying.
I
want to
go
hard.
Next year. I really want to go next year. Yeah, and then it's very they cool. also do this thing. Well, so basically for $70, you get access to the park, a table, and music and lights. Like, they have that. But then you decorate the table and everybody brings the food that they want to eat.
And yeah, so, like if you, in our case, like we had so many people, there was a spreadsheet. So there'd be categories that was like, is somebody going to bring ice? Is somebody going to bring non-alcoholic drinks? Somebody should bring this. The woman that was organizing was basically like, once we pick a theme, I will bring the table setting and you can bring additional stuff. But I'll bring napkins, silverware, cups, plates. And she did bring, our theme was Midsummer Night's Dream. And everything she brought was like gold and sparkly and or big like leaf place settings underneath it, so it looked really beautiful. Like, each table looks very beautiful, even though you're using plasticware.
And do you have to be in the know to get invited to this, or can you just like
no, it's a public thing, but it sells out.
Wow.
But it's a public thing. It's to raise money for the park, and then you just buy tickets, and then they're pretty organized. Like, the staff was really helpful.
This sounds amazing. And then the night before, Quinn and I went to a tasting where so much cheap wine. Well, it was delicious wine. It wasn't cheap, but it was like $6 glasses of wine and then a tasting. And Quinn and I sat down and like we took advantage of the olives in front of us in a way that was really aggressive. But I make no apologies for who we are. And then they described all these little bites and we just got to eat, which was great. The only problem was I was hungry when I left.
We did, but then I gave you a piece of pizza.
You gave me a piece of pizza? Still hungry when I got home.
I feel that. It was not a ton of food, but it was a ton of food that was free.
It was, well, that's what I'm saying. Is I was like, I probably could have gone to sleep, but I also had 4 glasses of wine where I was like, oh, I should eat something. That would be good for me. I have to give a shout out. Remember our Patreon, Julia, who we now know how to say her name, which is Julia. Not Julia, not Julia, not Julia. I have to say, she wrote it.
Julia.
And it's funny.
I'm so sorry.
The Occam's razor of it all, right? It's like, what did she say? She goes, thanks for my 2 cents. Pronounced like Julia, but very close.
Very close. At least we didn't pronounce it as Hans. What do you mean, very close? We really screwed it up.
Let that be a lesson. We tried two pronunciations of the name. Two. Both.
Like, both. It's bad.
We could have just gotten by with one. Julia, Julia.
We're very sorry. We apologize deeply.
Julia, let this be in place of a song. It's just us saying your name, Julia.
Julia, 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 Julia.
Julia's not getting 3 songs. We can't. We can't. It's too much.
And also, you don't want to hear me sing today. I don't want to hear me sing today.
What did you do after the party? Was the party fun?
It was great. Rosie turned 7. Oh, my God. That was really funny. They did RE1, RE2, RE3. And then they were like, 7. Koa turned to me and goes, Rosie's 7? Damn. I was like, what are you? Like, she looks good. I was like, what is happening? Damn. I was like, what a response. It was very funny.
That's really good. I was telling Quinn, I was watching the kids while they were at the Prospect Park soiree, and we were playing shadow puppets before the kids were going to bed. And, like, you know, shadow puppets can be menacing, right? So we're, playing, and there's lights happening, and Griffin's like, look, I got this phone to call Mama. He was calling you. It was a walkie-talkie. And so he was like, I'm calling Mama, right? Isn't this right, Carrie? And I was like, yes, that's right. And then I think something really scared him. That kid out of nowhere fucking takes this walkie-talkie and whips it at the wall. I just hear like, crash. And he goes, looks, and he goes, sorry. And I was like, I think we're done. I think we're going to go to bed. It's that, what a finale. And then I was like, Griffin, what did you do? And I'm like, there's black marks on that wall from him whipping it.
You know,
it's fine. It's a kid's room.
He was scared. He got scared.
I think he was very empowered. I think what was nice is we kind of know fight, flight, or freeze. I feel like, you know what? I think we knew this, though. I think he's a fighter. I think we knew this about Griffin. The fight is there. The fight is there.
Carrie, tomorrow's my last day at my internship, and I just went and bought an orchid for my
nice
supervisor. And the two women that work in my office, I got little succulents for, because I felt like I've been in an office with them for a year. It's weird to just be like, peace.
This is all really good stuff.
Recommend
this
it.
This is all really good stuff.
Okay. All right.
You have to tell a story. It's your turn.
All right, I'll do it.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creeply.
My story I got from an Unsolved Mysteries episode that was old school as hell.
Quinn, if really we cover fun. The same fucking case.
No, definitely not.
Are you sure?
Click to Houston.
Okay, not thank
and
God.
Ranker. This is in Houston, if you didn't get what I was trying to throw down
in
there.
Houston? It's not in Soho?
It's in Houston, Texas, on October 12th. Didn't write a year. Oh, 2000, maybe.
Wait a minute. I just realized I sometimes get America's Most Wanted and Unsolved Mysteries confused.
Oh, you watched America's Most Wanted.
No, I watched Unsolved Mysteries, but for some reason, I just think it's Pat Walsh, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
Jack Walsh is his son that we covered, that case, right?
Yeah, but anyway, his son went missing. So sad.
Yes, but Pat Walsh, I'm always just like, Unsolved Mysteries, and they're not the same at
no,
all.
No. Continue. Mary Lou Morris is a 48-year-old loan officer. She's married to Jay, and she's doing a typical day, going off to work. But when Jay tries to call her later, he cannot reach her. He calls her again and again. She doesn't come home. Something is off. He calls the work. She hadn't been at work. So he reports her missing. 3 miles east of their house, a man finds a burning car with a body inside it, burnt beyond recognition, and calls the police. So Jay hears that this happened. He feels panicked. He picks up his stepdaughter and drives to the scene. And it's her. Her jewelry melted onto her body, so they are able to track her jewelry and understand that this was not motivated by theft. Everything is there except her wedding band. But that wasn't worth more than some of the other stuff she had, so they're a little confused about motive right now. 3 days later, in the same area in Houston, Mary McGinnis Morris, a 39-year-old nurse who looks strikingly similar to Mary Lou Morris. She's a very loved woman. I mean, she's a nurse. We all love a nurse, right? She works 14 hours a day. All the staff loves her. Well, all the staff with the exception of one kind of weird guy that we know she didn't get along with, and she told friends that he made her feel nervous and that she felt afraid of him. And the friend was like, do you really think he could hurt you? And she said, yes, I do. I think he could do worse. Very creepy. She stops by her office one night to pick up papers, and she sees a bunch of things moved around on her desk and pictures flipped over, and she's freaked out, and she goes over to his desk, and he has written, like, you're doodling, death to her. And she's like, that's about me.
Don't love that.
She doesn't like him. She's freaked out. She calls her husband, Mike. She's clearly upset. When she gets home, he's like, what do you want to do? And she's like, I want you to teach me how to use a gun. I want to get a gun. I want to carry a gun around for protection. And he does. And they get this gun and put it under the driver's seat in her car. A few weekends later, she meets a friend off hours at the clinic to give them an allergy shot. Sounds really nice. Like, I get why she was well-liked. If I was like, hey, can we just go to your work?
Hey,
can you get this allergy shot for me?
I love a little histamine, a little boost of antihistamine.
Right. Then she says goodbye to her friend. She's going to go run errands and make her family dinner. Goodbye. That afternoon, the friend gets a call from her and she says, I'm at a drugstore and I'm freaked out. Somebody's following me around. I have to go back to the office and do a few things and sign out, but I'm totally freaked out. I just wanted to be on the phone with somebody. She gets off the phone, and 12 minutes after making that call, we know that she calls 911. that phone call has not been released because her attack is heard on that phone call.
Oh, wow.
And it's very, very upsetting. It's very disturbing. It's screaming. And it's the sound of a gunshot. And she was found dead in her car in a remote area a few miles from her house.
And burned?
No. Oh. Just shot. But what I think is weird... Okay, so then the daughter from the first case I told you about, Mary Lou Morris, remember, has a daughter that the dad mm-hmm. drove with the stepdaughter. She's watching the news and hears her mom's name mentioned during the newscast. And she's like, what? She's thinking the news crew is messed up because they have some of the details of her mom's death wrong. And she's getting ready to do the funeral and all these things. And she's like, hold up. They're getting this wrong, because she's not realizing in that moment it's a different Mary Morris. It's that also died in a car 3 days apart in the same area. They both died in their car. They were both murdered. No one knows who killed them.
It's like the Terminator with Sarah Connor. It's like there's a guy just going after Mary Morris or going after Sarah Connor.
Yeah. Oh, and the way that she finds out, by the way, so she's hearing the news and she's like, why are they covering my mom's case and doing such a bad job of it? Then she's talking to the funeral director and saying, I really want my mom buried with her jewelry. And they say, well, the jewelry would have been picked up with the body. And she's like, no, no, my mom's remains were already picked up. I need to find out where her jewelry is and how to pick that up. And they're like, no, your mom is still here. Mary Morris is here. And then they put her on hold for a really long time. Then they get back on the phone. And that's when they're like, so sorry for the confusion. There's another dead Mary Morris here. And she's like, what? They do an investigation on Mary McGinnis Morris's death, the one that was the nurse, and they're thinking it's that coworker because he tried to discredit her and get her in trouble and it didn't work, and then he ended up quitting his job. So he's a definite suspect. Also, her husband said he was at the movies at the time of the murder with his daughter, and there were some issues with that alibi. I'm not totally straight what those issues were. But he also wouldn't let his daughter be questioned at all at the time. So it was hard to corroborate this alibi. Mm-hmm. So Mike gets brought in. They're like, you know, he's the husband. I think he's just not an idiot where he's understands that his wife was murdered and he's the husband. Yeah. So he does things that they freak out about. Remember, this is vintage Unsolved Mysteries. So things like he asks for a lawyer and they're like, oh, really? And one of the guys that they're interviewing at Unsolved Mysteries is like, when you need a lawyer, you did something. Like, wait, no. And then he won't take a polygraph because he's on anti-anxiety medication. He just, like, that's not going to go well for me.
A lawyer's going to be like, you cannot take a polygraph. I will not allow it. Like, as soon as you have a lawyer involved, they're like, no.
They're speculating a bunch. Yeah. I think what they were most upset about is that they found out that they were having marital issues and that allegedly mm-hmm. she had had an affair with a friend and there'd been a confrontation, or there was a rumor that she had an affair and there was a confrontation and she said, no, it's not true. I'm not totally sure what the gossip was, but there's enough gossip that they're hearing from people that knew Mary McGinnis Morris that they think Mike has enough of a motive that he could have done this. Then they follow the money and there's a life insurance payout of $700,000. But the thing that makes them the most crazy of all these things that I can't make heads or tails of either is that there's a phone call he made to his wife's cell phone at the time they believe she was murdered. The call is 4 minutes long and it's on the phone bill. He says, yes, I called her, but it just rang and I was letting it ring. I don't know why it showed up on the phone bill, but they're like, it wouldn't show up on the phone bill if you don't pick it up. And what were you doing waiting for it to ring for 4 minutes? That doesn't make any sense. So they have this feeling of there was a call completed from her phone. And if he was out somewhere else making that call, who picked up? If she was dead, who was on the other end? they think that it could be someone killed his wife, and he had a conversation with them to confirm right. that. At some point, an anonymous caller reaches out to the Houston Chronicle and says, I'm not going to tell you who I am, but I am going to tell you what happened. That first murder, which was not of the nurse, but was of the loan officer, Mary Lou Morris, that was an accident. That was a mistake. That was a hitman who had been hired to kill Mary McGinnis. But because there's two Mary Morrises that live in the same town and look alike, he killed the wrong Mary Morris and then did the correct job the week later. And then they start to think about how that first Mary Morris was missing her wedding ring and how that's a very common thing with a hitman is to bring back the wedding ring and be like,
yeah.
Your spouse is dead. Police can't find anything specific to support any of that. So they're looking for clues. But because they never find anything in support of this, they just have to say, we're going to say this was a really weird coincidence that this happened. And that's how they leave it.
Either of them?
Right. Two unsolved mysteries. Same town, 3 days apart, both named Mary Morris, that look very, very similar.
I think there is some truth to that, that accidental hitman.
And Mike would be the one that they would be looking at for that. His daughter, now that she's older, talks about it and says, it wasn't my dad. Their relationship wasn't great, but they were trying to make it better, and I just want peace for him. She talks about how she can't imagine what he's been through losing this woman that he loved, and then he had a 15-year-old daughter he had to raise on his own. And she says she really hopes that both cases get solved and that all the families that were left behind by both women deserve peace and to know what happened. She says she does agree that it's suspicious that these two Mary Morrises died and they were killed so close together with the same name. But to this day, neither case has been solved due to lack
of
evidence.
That's so sad. That's so sad. Do you think it was...
I actually kind of think it was a coincidence. And the reason I think that is if you listen to Radiolab has a really good episode on coincidences, but it's called something fancier like stochasticity or something.
Okay. Stoicity? I don't know.
Stochastic means randomly determined, having a random probability distribution or pattern. And Radiolab does an episode on it that's really, really interesting where they open with something really wild that I'm going to botch, but I'll give you the glazed mm-hmm. over version. A little girl named Alice writes a note and ties it to a balloon all about herself. I have a pet gerbil named Tanky. I'm an only child. I like to ride a bike and sing, and I'm Alice McGuire, and then like ties it to a balloon and sends it. The balloon ends up in a yard of a girl the exact same age, born the same year, named Alice, that has the same kind of pet with a similar name, and they have the two hobbies she listed are also her hobbies. Well, and this really happened. This is a real story. I just can't remember the details, but everybody went absolutely bonkers when you hear about this story, and they take it apart in this way that is like, coincidences freak us out, but when you think about random probability, there has to be a certain number of coincidences, basically. Like, things will start to match up. It's no different than right. the idea that when you flip a coin, there's a 50-50 chance that it's heads or tails, no matter how many times you've flipped it. So you would think, for instance, that if you flipped a coin 99 times and it was tails every time, you'd have a feeling of it's got to be heads next, as though there was more of a probability that it's heads, but it will remain a 50-50 probability, and maybe on the 100th one it will be tails again. So it's something in that neighborhood of explaining things and understanding that with all how big this world is and how many stories there are in it, there are bound to be a few stories like this where somebody with the same name and the same look dies in a similar way in the same town. It's right. truly possible.
I feel like it was definitely more probable and possible in like ancient or like in like medieval times, to borrow a phrase that we just did, like, because I bet a lot of people were named the same name. I mean, I think,
I mean, the name is Mary Morris. It's not
an uncommon name, but the act of being murdered is incredibly uncommon. That to me is, I think, the biggest outlier is like,
yeah. And these two women that are
of similar
in gangs.
I mean, otherwise you have, or you have a serial killer who, or you have the Terminator, which is like, I stand by that. Have you seen The Terminator?
Stand by The Terminator, yeah.
I just saw the beginning of it recently. Had never seen it before.
It's a great movie.
And I didn't finish it. But it's a great movie. But it's like, yeah, Sarah Connor is being hunted by the Terminator. And, like, maybe that's the real life. Was Steven Spielberg? Was it, you know, I don't know. Mary Morris, Sarah Connor? I don't know. But I do think the probability of being murdered is so low. I think what's weird is, what's confusing or what's hard is that both of them have such different, we're different MOs, correct? Like, mm-hmm. Or were both of them gunshot wounds?
No, one is burnt beyond recognition and one is shot. And they're both, both killed in their cars.
But that to me also feels unique, where I would assume that a hitman would have an MO, have like a way to do it. This does feel like, that's the only thing that I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
Unless it was like a very good hitman who was like, I like to sort of change my styles.
I like to change it up.
Let's, for this one, let's try a different energy. Okay. Last night, I didn't tell you. Last night, I got bored and I painted my nails and I did designs.
Ooh. It looks great.
This one, I'm not proud of because it looks like a maple leaf.
Oh, what's wrong with that? Don't you think you want people to think you're Canadian?
I do. But aren't they cool? What do you
think?
They're
really cool. You did a great job.
I have a little like, there's a little brush that I just kind of fucked with.
I was going to ask, how do you get so detailed?
I bought a little, like, I have three of them. They're a little brush, and I just, like, deep, deep, deep. I had never done it before, and I was like, I'll try this.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Okay. My turn to tell a story. I got this information from Medium, Unsolved Mysteries. And Mamma Mia, I think, was another one of the sites.
Here we go again.
My, how could you have died? Teresita Bassa. So Teresita Bassa, she is born in the Philippines in 1929. And she decides she wants to move to the U.S. So she moves to the U.S. in the 1960s. And something about her is she loves music. And she's in her 30s. And she's actually planning to enroll in music classes at Indiana University, which obviously I went to Indiana University and was a part of their music program or musical theater. She wanted to go in their music school. I get it. So fun. She wanted to do it. And then, unfortunately, she doesn't get that far. Because she realizes that in order to afford this and going to school for music, she has to make money. And she's also a nurse by trade. So she ends up settling and working in Chicago. And she works as a respiratory therapist at the Edgewater Hospital in Chicago. Now, this hospital no longer exists, but it was on the north side. I looked it up. And music is still a big part of her life. She's applying to pursue a PhD in music at the time in the late 70s. And she is 48 years old. So obviously, if you followed that math, in her 30s, she's like, I want to enroll in music. And then she realized it was hard. And so she went to school as a nurse, or she went to work as a nurse. And then by the time she was in her late 40s, she was like, I'm going to try to pursue this PhD in music. I'm still not giving up on this dream, which I love that for her. She would work in the hospital during the day, and then she would teach neighborhood kids the piano for free. So she was super sweet. She was pretty quiet. She was unassuming. It's February 21st, day after your birthday, 1977, and a neighbor sees Teresita's apartment with black smoke coming from the window. So they call the fire department. The fire department gets there. When they enter, they find that it's just her living room that's ablaze. And so they're able to put it out, and it's mostly contained to the living room. And they see in the middle of the room, there's a mattress that's on fire. And so once they put the fire out, they lift up the mattress and they see Teresita's body under it. And she is naked and she is dead, not from the fire. She has been stabbed in the chest. She has a knife embedded in her chest. So they start to investigate what has happened, and they believe, because of the state of her body, that she was undressed, that it was probably sexually motivated, that she was possibly sexually assaulted, and the fire was to cover up the crime scene. Now, while there is evidence that she was assaulted, which they didn't get into, my assumption is that her body was naked, they did do an autopsy, and they determined that she was not raped. The cause of death, like I said, was the knife wound, not the fire. And they start to investigate her death. They can't find anyone with a motive to hurt her. They think maybe it's a burglary gone wrong. But the police don't find any big evidence of theft. Her family notes that her jewelry is gone. Because of the fire, they did not have a lot of evidence at all surrounding her death. What they did find was a memo that just said, quote, get theater tickets for AS, the initials AS. And so they think maybe AS is involved in the murder. And they start looking in, and her family, her friends, there's no AS. They look into her boyfriend, who they heard sometimes she argued with. But again, there's not enough evidence to go beyond just suspecting him. And so they're thinking, okay, maybe something to do with this AS, right? She'd get theater tickets for AS. Maybe, you know, she did tell a friend that night that a man was coming to her home at 7:30 the day she died. So maybe that was AS. Again, they're like, the police have nothing. They have no clue. It's been 5 months since her death. And she worked with this woman, Remibas Chua, who goes by Remy. And she's married to her husband, Jose, who's a surgeon, I think, mm-hmm. at the same hospital. And so the death of her friend obviously weighs heavily on this community. They're both Filipino, and they work together. And obviously, it's very scary to think something happened to your friend and to not know what happened. And so Remy is plagued by the memory of this. And one day she's taking a nap, and Jose, her husband, is nearby. And she sort of starts talking in her sleep in another voice, Jose says, and he recognizes the voice is not Remy's, and the voice says, Doctor, I need your help. The man who murdered me is still at large. And then Remy, while asleep, starts speaking in Tagalog, which is the language of the Philippines. Now, Remy also speaks Tagalog, but it's not a language that Remy typically speaks often, right? Mm-hmm. And she's speaking it in a different accent. And Jose is listening to his wife sort of take on this speech, this personality. And in this voice, she says that she is Teresita. And she reveals that her killer's name is Alan Showery.
So specific.
So specific. And if you recall, A.S., Alan mm-hmm. Showery. So Teresita's voice then says that this man who killed her is an orderly that works at the hospital, and that Joe needs to go to the police and tell them what happened. So Remy then comes to, and Jose's like, whoa, can you believe that just happened? And Remy's like, what just happened? And he's like, the voice that you said, you know, the thing that you told me, that you are Teresita and you named your killer. And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. What? Right. No recollection. And so Jose is like, that's super weird. I don't know if I can actually go to the police and be like, hey, my wife took a nap and she started chit-chatting about Teresita's murderer. I don't have enough evidence. I'm just going to ignore this. This seems like maybe she's stressed. I don't know. So then Remy's like, that is crazy, but I have been having dreams or visions of Teresita, like begging me to go to the police and telling the police what happened to her. But I don't know what happened to her, right? I just really miss my friend. And so Jose is like, I'm not going to go to the police, whatever. So then Remy, I don't know how much longer later, but Remy takes another nap. And once again, she takes another nap. Good for her. And Teresita appears and Jose is there. And Teresita starts asking Jose, why have you not gone to the police? And Teresita says, well, why haven't you gone? Teresita says, yeah, she said it. And then Jose goes, well, I don't have any evidence against this man. I can't just go to the police. And then Teresita's voice goes, well, he took my jewelry and he gave it to his girlfriend. And Jose is like, okay, well, Remy comes to and she's like, what? What happened? I took a lovely nap. And he's like, well, I communed with a spirit. This doesn't feel restful. And so Jose is like, okay, I'm going to bring this finally, now that I have like a kernel of information, I'm going to bring it to the police and just like offload the information. I don't want to be haunted by this woman through my wife's sleep, right? So Jose goes to the detective, Joe Statula, and he's like, all right, I'm hearing this information. I don't know if I can trust this information or not. Your wife said it in her sleep. Okay, let's see what happens. So he's like, I'm going to start slow. He starts to do a background check on Alan Showery, and he finds that he lives close to Teresita, her house. And he looks at his history, and he has priors for robbery and sexual assault. And interestingly enough, when he starts digging deeper, coworkers at the hospital that they both work at, because Alan Showery is an orderly at the hospital, at Edgewood Hospital, coworkers are like, yeah, he was planning on going to her apartment that night to repair her television.
What?
So the man that she had said was going to come over is, in fact, Alan, which I also was curious to, like, get theater tickets for AS. He's coming over. Is that the way she was going to pay him? I don't know that. I wasn't able to connect those dots. But he was so supposed to come over there. So now Detective Joe is like, all right, I have that he lives nearby and that he was going to be at her home the night of her murder. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's bring him in for questioning. So he brings Alan in for questioning, and Alan's like, yeah, no, I did go to her apartment, but I didn't have the proper tools to fix her TV. So then I went back home. And when I went back home, I had to fix some electrical problems at my house. And my girlfriend, who I live with, can corroborate this because electrical problems. And so Detective Joe's like, huh, I don't know if I believe you, Alan. Let's dig deeper. Let's lift this log and see what's underneath. And so he calls Alan's girlfriend and he's like, hey, how about that crazy night with electrical problems? And his girlfriend's like, electrical problems? Huh? And he's like, that feels like not a strong alibi. And then he goes, hey, have you received any jewelry from your boyfriend recently? Just curious. Wondering if you liked it. No. And he's like, and she's like, well, yeah, that's crazy. I did. I actually did get some jewelry from him in February as a late Christmas present. And I don't know if you know this. This woman was murdered February 21st. So she got some jewelry in late February. So he tells her, he's like, hey, I'm going to give you an option. Do you want to bring in this jewelry just to like exonerate your boyfriend? But we'd love to have Teresita's friends and family kind of take a look at it and see if it looks familiar. You know, we're just looking for answers anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay? And she's like, okay, sure. Yeah, I'll bring it in. So she brings it in. She brings in the jewelry. Teresita's friends and family look at it and they're like, holy shit, this is Teresita's jewelry. How do you have it? And so once they have the jewelry,
this is
they have
insane.
The lack of alibi, they confront Alan Showery and he confesses to the murder.
Wow.
He says he did go to her place and he didn't have tools and he did leave. That part of the story was true. But he planned to return to rob her. She was better off than he was. And so he had made this plan and he knew she had a good amount of money and he was having financial difficulty. He was behind on his rent. So he used the TV story to gain access to her home. Once he returned, she let him in. And when she turned to lock the door, he grabbed her from behind and attacked her. He says he did not touch her sexually, but he took off her clothes to make it look like a sexual crime and then took her mattress and put it over her body and set it on fire. All of this he did for the jewelry and a grand total of $30 in cash.
Nuts.
He confesses to the police, but when the time comes for the case, he pleads not guilty for her murder. The defense lawyer in this case says, "Never in my knowledge has a man been arrested because of a vision." He also said that, you know, this woman, Remy, she fakes the visions because she was fired from their hospital and she has anger against Alan. And the first case that they bring to trial where he pleads not guilty, it's a hung jury. It's a mistrial.
Yeah.
Not long after, he ends up pleading guilty. And he pleads out so he gets a better cushy deal. He is found guilty on arson, robbery, and murder. He is sentenced to 4 years each for robbery and arson and only 14 years for the murder, with the possibility of parole after 7. Apparently, he is a very nice, kind prisoner, and his sentence is reduced to 4 years for good behavior. So he entered prison in 1979, and he is released in 1983.
Wow.
This case was on Unsolved Mysteries in 1990, and it is one of the few crimes that was solved before the broadcast. But the unsolved mystery is, did Teresita channel through her friend Remy to solve her own crime? This is a very popular case where it's like the victim solved her own crime feasibly.
Yeah.
Skeptics will question whether Remy knew something. Maybe Remy knew about this meeting with Alan the night of Teresita's murder. Maybe they made up this story about her communion because they didn't want to be implicated in what they knew, right? By saying, my wife had this vision, you could get away scot-free of like, I don't know what happened, don't ask me anything. Maybe she connected the dots in her own. Maybe Alan made her feel weird. Maybe something happened in her dream. But the jewelry bit, I think, is so
wild, isn't it?
Yeah. And so maybe that was inadvertent. I don't know. But all of the things in the dream that Remy had, or that Jose had heard that Remy had spoke through her mouth, whether she was conscious of it or not, all came to fruition. All were true.
That is so crazy. What?
So that's
a
story.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, I don't know if many other cases can exist in that. But to your point, is it a coincidence, right? Like, to your point, is it spot on? I don't know.
Woo!
Yeah. Listen, I hope, Teresita, I hope you haunt everyone's asses. Like, I hope you haunt Alan's ass.
For sure.
Or I hope you have peace. I hope after that justice was served, you're able to live on an island and enjoy a pina colada. And,
yeah, you deserve,
you know,
it.
You just, and play all the music your heart desires.
Relaxation.
It's also just like the fact that he came in and robbed her and murdered her feels also really like all of it doesn't totally.
You're like,
I'm,
for
what was it all for? Yeah.
Yeah, it's, but a little, for what part is really dicey.
Yeah. And also like her jewelry. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
That's the story of Teresita Bassa.
Well,
sorry, this is a shorty, but here we are. Here we are.
Let's go to bed.
Let's go to bed. I'm going to go work.
Yeah, what are you going to go do?
And
Tell us.
I'm seeing Lindsay Hope Perlman's show tonight at
Green
Room 42. We're seeing Tears, a rock and roll love story. I'm seeing with my friend Chris.
Oh, that'll be a blast.
So I'm excited. It's at 9:30, which feels, and it's an hour 15.
Oh, that's great. At least they know.
It's a reading, so I'm like,
you start
curious.
That late.
It starts that late, but I'm gonna make some dinner. It's nice to know that you can like make dinner beforehand and not feel like, if I think it's at 7, you go to a show, you're like, oh, and then you know what I think I'm doing tomorrow? When? I didn't tell you.
Tell me.
I'm doing it. I'm seeing Titanic.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna have
so
much fun.
I'm
excited. It's gonna rock your world.
It's going to rock my world. I'm going to feel all the feelings, and I'm excited to be there.
Good.
My friend Alex, who had seen it, was like, Carrie, it's closing. You have to see this. And I was like, okay. And he's like, we can get rush tickets. And I was like, okay. So I'm going to get rush tickets.
You're
going to
have a blast.
It'll be great. I'm going to have fun. And I'm excited. And then I go to see my family on Wednesday, and I'm so excited to see my nephews. My brother's birthday is today, and last night my whole family was together, and I'm going to show you because they're so cute. I love them so much.
Look at those cuties. Look at those little
Look
faces.
They're so cute.
They're so cute.
Oh, I'm so excited. And then we was talking to them yesterday on FaceTime, and Tommy was like, it was also the other thing I forgot to tell you about watching them on Saturday was Koa. They had started this epic fort that I think I sent you pictures of. Mm-hmm. It was so good. And Griffin had these goggles that were so cute, but Koa kept being like, Carrie, take a picture and send it to your nephews. Take a picture and send it to your nephews.
Oh, that's very sweet.
It was really sweet.
It's like, they got to see my fort game. It's strong.
He's like, this is great. They're not going to believe it. But on the phone call, they were like running around like mayhem. And I'm so excited to be a part of it.
I'm so excited for you.
I am. Okay. Goodbye, dear readers. We'll see you next time.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.